Chris Lorton here, and welcome to the Local Spotlight Show here at WJBM Studios in Jerseyville, Illinois, the voice of the Tri-Counties. Well, going to have to talk about some supernatural voices today. I had to have him back in because it was so interesting talking about all the ghosts and abnormal stuff that goes on. And so I have Roger Shuffle back in. Roger, welcome to the Spotlight Show.
Thanks, Chris. Good to be back.
Yes. Glad to have you. You know, we touched a little bit about, well, first of all, everybody, if you don't know Roger Shuffle, he's a Jersey County boy.
Absolutely.
And have been into many things in his life. Works at the FS right now.
Tri-County FS.
Organizer. And also... Moonlights as a ghost chaser.
Yep.
And we both have a mutual friend, you know, from years ago. He passed away in 2018. Ron Bachman, known around town as Puppy.
Yep, Puppy.
Yep. And just wanted to, you know, after we got done with the interview, I just wanted to comment, talk about Puppy a little bit.
Sure.
He was pretty young when he passed, wasn't he?
Yeah. Well, gosh, it was... 18, so 6 years ago, he was 56.
Yeah.
Way too young
way
to pass.
Too young.
Yeah, had a heart attack. Plugged the Widowmaker, they call it.
Yeah,
and it was just I just couldn't believe it. Still have trouble believing it.
Now where did he grow up at? Where did Puppy grow
up? He grew up in South County, South St. Louis County, off of South Lindbergh, down that way. Played football for Lindbergh High in high school. He was All-American, actually, his junior and senior year.
He was.
And then went on to Nebraska, played football in Nebraska.
Yeah, and if you've ever met him, you know you've met him because he
was
like 6'11",
yep.
Knocking probably, on 400 pounds.
Yeah, probably close to 400 pounds. He's a big boy. He, I always said he was a mountain of a man. I took it for granted. I was around him so much, I just didn't realize it. And then... we get in a crowd with him, and he was quite a novelty.
Oh, yeah,
and quite a guy. You like you said, you didn't forget meeting Pup.
When I operated the Lorton Hotel, I got to, and also the Varsity Club back then. I used to see him quite often.
Yep.
You know.
Yep.
Such a nice guy.
Oh yeah, yeah. Great family. I mean, I was friends with all the family. I was practically part of the family, and he was definitely part of mine.
Yeah. Now, how'd you guys get together?
Well, I first met Puppy when I went to Arnold, Missouri. Bill Killian, that used to have the night gallery here in the south part of the county, which I worked at. I worked at a nightclub that he owned down at Arnold, Missouri called Secrets. And Puppy came in and interviewed to be the doorman down there. And
Did they hire him right off the bat?
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
Bill always had a philosophy that you could stop most of the trouble that was going to be in your club, and you know this from owning the bars and stuff.
Oh yeah,
at the door, you could take care of it right away. Well, he was pretty intimidating to be there at the door checking IDs.
Oh yeah,
so it worked out well, and we just hit it off right off the bat. And it's funny, he had friends. He grew up down there, and it's like when he met me, and then Ron Breitweiser also worked down there, worked for Bill, and we worked together down there. When he met us and started coming up here and visiting and hunting with us, he got into coyote hunting with us. And it's just like he left that down there and fell in love with Jerseyville. And lo and behold, later wound up buying a house up here and moved up here.
Yeah.
And then his mom and dad moved up here and his brother. The whole family wound up moving up here. They loved it.
You know, his size opened a lot of doors.
Oh, yeah.
In football.
Oh, yeah.
At nightclubs. And also... driving the Bigfoot.
Yeah, we worked together at Bigfoot as well. Yeah.
How'd you guys come across that?
Well, he worked there probably a year and a half, 2 years before I did. Actually, believe it or not, some of the bands that played at the nightclubs we worked at had friends that worked at Bigfoot.
Well, and explain Bigfoot, what it is, because some people might not know what you're talking
Bigfoot
about.
We're talking about the monster truck.
Yeah.
The Ford monster truck. It used to be located at 270 in Lindbergh. Now they have a shop in Pacific, Missouri. Bob Chandler owned it, Bob and Marilyn Chandler. And I worked for him for 3 years in the late 80s, 86, 7, and 8. And, they got started. It was a 1974 Ford, the first one he built.
And now, did they use the same size cab or... or did they make a bigger cab?
Back in the days I was there, it was an actual Ford truck body.
Okay.
Yes, it was an actual Ford truck body. And, of course, the first two of them were actually on Ford truck frames. They were on stock frames. lifted up, of course, with 5-ton military axles, and then they went from the 48-inch tires to the 66-inch tires, which are the most common size now to use flotation tires, same size tires we use on the equipment out at FS on our floater trucks. And, you know, when I was there, we really made the big change in the 3 years I was there. Not because of me. It's just that that's the way the trend was going.
It might have been because of you, Roger.
Maybe a little farm boy innovation might have helped things out a little. No, Don Breitweiser and I worked down there for him. Ross Breitweiser from here in town, of course, he worked for him too. And we were there when the monster truck racing, if you will, really came to life.
What was that like?
And it was pretty neat at first, but the trucks that we were using then.
I mean, did they race like a drag race or what?
Most of the time, starting out, it was just basically a straight line drag race over maybe one or two sets of cars.
Over cars.
Yes, and then they started incorporating maybe a turn into it.
When you say one or two sets of cars, how many is in a set?
Basically, at that time, a set of cars was four cars. You could do a good car crush, we called it, with the truck using four cars. If you only use two cars, you could, yes, set the truck up on top of them, but basically it took up the entire two cars.
So, your question, every show, you guys have to go collect some more cars?
How long would
a car last? Would it last more than one show?
Oh, definitely, yeah. I mean, typically back then we'd work for a show promoter that would have at least two shows a night, possibly three. They might even have a Sunday afternoon show. And we'd have to have fresh cars for each day. And a lot of times we worked shows with maybe two monster trucks back before the racing started. We just have two monster trucks come in and just both of them just kind of put on a show crushing the cars, trying to get the wheels up in the air a little bit, you know, maybe back over the cars, just whatever. It just evolved into the more of the crazy stuff. And today it's just... I wouldn't say it's gotten out of hand, but it's really wild.
What are they doing today?
My gosh! Today they have the if you watch like Monster Jam and that kind of stuff, they have the freestyle is the big thing where they do the backwards wheelies and they practically just tear them up on purpose just to satisfy the crowd.
Tear the trucks up.
Which Bob Chandler didn't get into some of that early stuff of that kind of thing because. Some of the promoters, when they went into different towns, hey, if it was a Ford town, maybe the Ford truck needs to win today. Or if it was a Chevy town, maybe the Chevy truck needs to win today. And he didn't go along for that stuff. He was his own person, and then Bigfoot had a good enough reputation. They didn't need to do that kind of stuff. But when the racing first started when I was with them, MTRA, Monster Truck Racing Association.
Did you come up with that idea?
I did not. No, that was all Bob. No, that was all his brainchild. I just worked for the man.
So basically then you'd have two trucks. You had the Bigfoot and you had another truck, or somebody else would bring a truck?
Oh, yeah. They were trucks all over. I was in Long Island, New York, and did one of Gravedigger's first shows that he was at. And he didn't start out with a real good piece of equipment. He had a lot of breakdowns in that, but he built up just like everybody does. And Gravedigger is one of the big names in it now. But I was at Dennis's first show on Nassau Coliseum on Long Island. It was one of the first shows I remember him doing.
What's the biggest show that you ever were involved in, or attendance-wise?
Attendance-wise, I mean, I did some shows. I was at shows in the Pontiac Silverdome and that, 70,000, 80,000 people.
Crazy.
Superdome in New Orleans, we did it a few times.
Did you ever get to drive one in that?
Not in the big shows, but I did some shows. And actually, what they built the Fast Tracks, the track vehicle. They built it for me, and I was supposed to debut that in Pontiac. And then I decided to get into the tavern business and bought a tavern here in town, the Diner, and kind of got away from Bigfoot. But left on good terms, didn't burn any bridges. I could go down there today and say, hey, I'd like to do a show on the East Coast. Could I hop in and ride with you? And I would be welcome to go.
Now, you know, I'd like to think myself as a pretty good driver, although my wife doesn't think so.
Yeah.
But I've had less fender benders than her. I've had my share. But
sure.
What does it take to drive one of those trucks? Can I get in it and drive it or not?
You know, surprisingly enough.
Is it automatic or?
Yes,
shifter?
It is. It has an automatic transmission. I can't quote you everything on the trucks today because they've got away from me. They're more like a race buggy now with the fiberglass bodies. But when I was there doing shows, it was just a basic truck. It had a high-powered motor. It had automatic transmission. You kind of shifted it manually. It wouldn't shift itself. But you didn't have to clutch or anything. And you had a four-wheel drive lever next to the seat. And as you came to... somebody asked me on the East Coast one day, what's it feel like to do that? And I said, have you ever been in a wreck? Because basically it's a controlled car wreck. When you get, you know, when you lose sight of the cars, a typical car crush when I was there in the '80s, the old style trucks, what I call the real trucks. When you got to the cars, you would lose sight of them in front of the hood. And that's when you slipped it in four-wheel drive and nailed it. And you wanted to throttle through the back tires coming to the cars too. So the first...
Keep it going.
Right. You throttle it, the front tires hit, it wheel stands, the back tires hit, and it jumps. And then as soon as the back tires hit and you know you're in the air, of course, you let off the throttle. And as you land on the cars, you slip it out of four-wheel drive because it had lockers. It had differential lockers, which locked the wheels together so all four wheels would pull. So if you tried to turn the truck with it locked in four-wheel drive, it would bind itself up. And anybody that knows anything about four-wheel drives, you understand how a four-wheel drive vehicle can bind itself up on dry pavement. Well, these would really bind themselves up. So you had to make sure you kicked it out of four-wheel drive as you come off the cars. That was a typical car crush when I was there.
I'll be darned.
Some guys were better at it than others. If you had the right timing, though, I always timed it to where if I lost sight of that first car, you know, over the hood, that's when you get on the gas.
Hey, if you're just joining us, I have Roger Shuffle with me. We're talking car crushing and a few other things.
Yeah.
And now, Roger, did those trucks ever go backwards? I mean, did they ever flip over did you ever have them flip?
Yes, you could. I mean, I've seen guys do that. And of course, nowadays they'll stand them on the back end. They make them so they'll stand up and then, you know, they can goose them in reverse and set them back down. They can do a lot of things with them today that's amazing that we weren't doing back then, but we didn't have that type of truck.
Now this track vehicle that they built for you, and then you decided to go buy a bar and get married.
There you go. Yeah.
what was up with that? What kind of vehicle was that?
It was a personnel carrier. It wasn't actually a tank, but it was a military personnel carrier.
It had
tracks on it, and you would steer it. When Bob bought it, it actually had Chevrolet motors in it. Of course, it had twin engines. It was twin engine.
Okay.
And we switched those to the twin 460 Fords that most of the Bigfoots ran back then. And I actually preferred, if I was going to have a track vehicle, it had a steering wheel. And it had a hydraulic system that would steer it. I wanted to bring it back to levers. I wanted to drive it with levers because I had ran bulldozers and stuff around the farm and that. And I felt like I would be able to more control it with levers. So we moved it back to
like a skid load.
Exactly. We moved it back to sticks. And it was easy to run. It was neat. It was a neat vehicle. Wasn't the smoothest riding vehicle out there. There wasn't a lot of cushion to it.
Did the fans like it?
The fans did like it. It was very destructive because it was super heavy, and it would really cut the cars. It would slice them up and do a lot of destruction, which that's what they're all there to see. They're there to see things get destroyed.
Uh-huh. Now, in that business, the guy that owned the business, he would be continuously looking for and buying junk cars, right, that would look kind of decent?
Well, actually, that was to the show promoter. The show promoter would provide the cars, and most of the time they would come in out of salvage yards or something. And they would come in, they would tow them in on, you know, they would be able to tow them. Of course, when we got done with them, had to haul them out. They wouldn't be able to be towed anymore.
I see.
If they did not have the glass out of them, we would break the glass out of them because you didn't want glass flying into the crowd or something like that. Usually on the lead cars, the first two cars, sometimes we would have a stack of four, sometimes as many as six or eight. But on the lead two cars, we'd flatten the outside tires to keep them from sliding out.
Hey, how about our friend Puppy, Ron Bachman? They hired him to drive, right? Because he started out
like I did as a crewman, and then he got into driving a little bit. He had an accident in a race, and he just didn't really want to do the racing anymore. It was pretty challenging for him to fit into the actual cockpit of it and operate things right. But then he got into what he was really meant to be.
What's that?
And that they built a truck, and he would just go out on static displays and basically talk to people and visit with people, go to like Ford dealers, did a lot of the, Bigfoot has a lot of big sponsorships, Firestone Tires, things like that.
Yeah.
He would go to their corporate places, like their big plants and that, and all the corporate people would come out, look at the truck, and visit with Ron. And he was just like a big PR man. And that's where he really shined in his later years with Bigfoot. He performed him a heck of a service doing that.
What kind of a showman was he?
Oh, yeah. He was definitely a showman. And what I was, you know, if he was here today, I'd say this about him, but he never let the truth stand in the way of a good story.
Well, exactly.
so he knew how to talk to people. And I just don't know of anybody. Well, maybe a couple guys in the nightclub days, but other than that, I can't tell you anybody.
Did you ever see him have to handle some people?
Oh gosh,
in
yes, yes. It was amazing.
What was his procedure?
A good story one night. Another bouncer. His name was Bill Davis, and Bill, he was a power lifter. He was a big man. He probably weighed 250. He took a guy out the side door, as we called it, at the club.
Yeah.
And I saw this guy's buddy head out, and he had a beer bottle in his hand, and I said, "Puppy, get him." And I did. He didn't know what I meant, and he reached his big long arms out the side door, and here he come in, and he had Bill Davis under the arms, and he just set him in like a little toy. He just reached out and got Bill and just set him back in the building.
The other bouncer.
He thought I meant get Bill back in here. I meant get the buddy with the beer bottle, you know. But and Bill come over to me and goes, "There's no excuse for that. I've never been manhandled like that in my life." But that's just, I mean, I don't know if he knew how strong he was. He was amazingly strong.
Did you ever see him have to handle people like in like somebody getting out of line? Did anybody ever challenge him?
Oh,
I mean, who would?
Not really. No, not really. He was pretty intimidating. Ross Breitweiser described him real well one time. He said he's real impressive till you get to know him. But he lived up to his nickname. He was just a puppy.
Yeah. Well, so he wasn't really a fighter per se.
Oh gosh, no. He didn't go looking for any trouble. Never. Never.
No.
Easygoing guy. Gentle giant, I guess, if you will.
Yeah. So you guys traveled all over the country.
Yep. Yeah. You could see Pup. One of the big things he did, I remember in Bigfoot, is here's where the farm boys got into it. We got the idea of putting a line lock on the truck, which would lock the front wheels, and then it would just set and spin the back wheels. It just set in place and spin the back wheels.
It was your idea.
We kind of helped him out with it a little bit. Chandler come up with it, I think, but we helped him out to get it done. We actually put spray nozzles, and this was where we come into play. We put spray nozzles on the back tires and wet them as it would do that, and it would make the tires smoke, and it just looked, you know. And
awesome.
Sergeant Slaughter, back in those days, he was the big-time wrestling name.
Yeah.
He would have his Cobra Corps come in, and they would hook a rope to the back of the truck, and there'd be 10 or 12 wrestlers, and it'd look like we were having a tug-of-war. And we could slip that line lock on and off and make the truck ease forward and that, so we could win, or they could maybe pull us backwards a little bit off the start.
Oh, so you're doing tug-of-war?
It looked like tug-of-war, and sometimes it made it look like the wrestlers. Well, as soon as Sergeant Slaughter saw Puppy, he said, "You're bigger than any of my wrestlers. I got to have you in my Cobra Corps." And so he would take his camouflage with him, and he'd go to the show, and he'd be part of it. And you can get on YouTube and find that. I mean, you can find Puppy, and he'll be the one at the end of the rope. He's the anchor man. But he'd be part of the Cobra Corps. They'd come out and pull the truck. But just YouTube that sometime. You can find video of it.
So you have fond memories. How long were you in that business?
Well, I was with Bigfoot 3 years. Now, of course, I was friends with Pup for over 30 years.
I see. So. Now, you and Pup got involved. We got a little bit of time left. Not much. But how did you guys get involved in ghost hunting together?
I guess it was about 15 years ago. I think, as I said the first time we got together, we decided that we wanted to go up to the Cheney Mansion here in town. Knew of the gals that kind of ran it up there. And they didn't have a website or anything like we do now, but they had some ghost hunts come over there, maybe give a $20 donation or something, and spend an evening up there and try to stir up a ghost or two. And we had, there's three kinds of hauntings. If you want to talk about the hauntings, there's an intelligent haunt, which we got to experience. That was my first experience in ghost hunting. We had a rattle on the basement door, and we went down there, and there's a slave quarters in the basement of the Cheney house.
Right.
Puppy asked the question, "Are there any slaves in the basement tonight?" And on a digital recorder that we were using at the time, it caught the recording, "Who you telling?" And that's a Class A EVP, they call it. And that kind of got us going. We kind of looked at each other and thought, "Well, this is interesting.
This is real.
And that's what kind of throwed me into from being a skeptic to a believer. And since then, I've seen it all up there, so I am 100% believer now.
Are you? Yep. So what are the three types of ghost hunting?
So we talked about that, being the intelligent. There's a poltergeist, which is it had a movie, Poltergeist. But a poltergeist is something that's kind of mischievous. It's a spirit that's mischievous that might throw things, move things. And we've had a couple of those things happen up there. I've actually got it on video. We have what's called cat balls, and they're actually a cat toy, like you'd buy for a pet.
Yeah.
But if you turn them on, they light up all different colors, and then they'll stop. But if you move it at all, if anything touches it at all or a vibration at all near it, the vibration will set it off and it'll light up again. And we actually had a cat ball get knocked off a table up there one night, and the spirit batted it off into the floor. And I've got it on video. I can't show you on the radio, but I can show you when we're done.
You were telling me that 518 was haunted.
Absolutely.
It is haunted.
It is haunted. Yeah. And I haven't been at it for years now since it was sold. But when Jeff Heitzig had it there at last, when it was a restaurant at last, we had a couple dinners up there and did a couple investigations and presented our evidence, and people were quite entertained with it. Puppy got into a big deal up there with our SLS camera. SLS camera, if you've watched any of the ghost shows, it's what comes up as an anomaly on the screen, and it looks like a stick figure. And Puppy had one going up there in the main corridor there, where, if you were ever in there, where the drinking fountain, the ice machine was. He had a little ghost there that was standing right next to him, and we were filming it. And whatever he would tell it to do, he'd say, you know, touch my hand. He'd put his hand out. It would put its hand on it like it was playing patty cakes or something like that. And he had a session with that ghost there for probably 10 minutes, right in the middle of the 518.
And you said that the 518, the girls would get the waitresses would.
So the waitresses had a little ghost that was, according to folklore, was possibly a small child that was killed out in front of the 5-8, or ran over by a horse and buggy and carried into the front room back when the Shepherds lived there. It was a Shepherd mansion. William Shepherd built that way back.
And wasn't he a doctor?
He was actually a railroad engineer.
Oh, okay.
Came to town and later got into, he had some brothers, and there was actually four Shepherd houses there. One sat where the Hardee's is now and two across the road. But there was four big houses there, and the 518 is the last one of the four. But anyway, they carried this small boy into the front room there, and he passed away. And rumor has it, folklore, whatever you want, legend, I guess local legend, says that he haunted the house. The girls at night would get, after closing, would get the front dining room, it's the front north room, to get ready for the next night. They'd come back in. Maybe the napkins were messed up, silverware messed up. So they nicknamed the little boy Oscar.
Oscar.
And when we did one of our investigations up there, I actually caught Oscar on tape. And I think Jeff Heitzig probably still has that on his computer. I need to get it back.
What did you actually catch on tape?
A small figure. It wasn't actually a video of a boy, but it was a small figure about the height a young boy would be, maybe 12, 14 inches above the table height. And he actually followed me out of the room. You could see me on the camera. He actually followed me out of the room.
Wow, that's cool.
Yeah, it really was. It'd make the hair stand up on your arms.
Well, you were showing me, prior to the show, showing me some videos that you had and showing the orbs, which was pretty cool.
Orbs, yes.
You know, I was like, whoa. And in that one video, you showed where the door opened.
Yes, the attic door. And that's an example of what's called a residual haunt. That's the third kind of haunt we haven't talked about. The attic door at the Cheney Mansion, and of course, there's other places that I'm sure have residual haunts as well. But the attic door is something that's a residual haunt. It's the same thing. It's either the door open or closing, and it doesn't do it all the time. Can't make it do it on command, but a few times out of the year, and I don't know what it is about it. I've never really documented it. I need to do that to find out maybe if there's a certain time of year it does it more than others, but it will open or close, and sometimes even somewhat on command when it's doing it. But it might go 6 weeks, 2-3 months, and not move. But then when it's active, it's very interesting.
Roger, guess what?
We're not out of time again, are we?
we're out of time. It's been so fun you coming back in and chatting with you. But take care. Thanks for coming in.
And you bet.
We'll see you again.
All right. Take care, Chris. Thank you.